And hopefully we'll have a much better experience to talk about in that game. 12-game
losing streak coming up.
of all the records, that's a great one. Hey guys, welcome to the Falcoholics post-game podcast for 2019. Preseason week 2, Atlanta hosting the New York Jets. I am DW, and I'm joined today by one of our writers and the Photoshop aficionado of the Falcoholic, our very own Evan Birchfield. Evan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. We're on an 11-game losing streak.
That's a pretty stunning statistic when you say it out loud.
It's impressive at this point. I don't even think it's a bad thing. It's just kind of like, it is
something else, that's for sure. Yeah, 11, and honestly I think if we get to 12-13 it's not gonna be shocking at all. Mm-hmm. with these Falcons. So this past Thursday, August 15th, the Falcons hosted the New York Jets in technically the second preseason game. It was the third for the Falcons since they did play in the Hall of Fame game to start off the entire NFL season. This one was interesting. And I think interesting in a bad way for many people. Let's start with offense, because I think that's, you know, what garnered a lot of attention from fans. So, Evan, just some quick thoughts on what you saw from the offense initially, maybe that you didn't like seeing or that you did like seeing. Just some high-level thoughts before we dive into some of the specifics.
Matt Ryan looked great, but also took way too many shots because the offensive line mm-hmm. was garbage. And he continuously took shots. And for some reason, they left him out there when, I don't know if they were just hoping the offensive line was going to be like, okay, we see he's getting destroyed back here. Maybe we'll all of a sudden be better. But he was taking way too many shots. He even scrambled and got tackled from behind or whatever. And that kind of mm-hmm. like, gave me that nervousness in my stomach, like, oh yeah, this doesn't count. but the offensive line looked terrible. What I can remember off the top of my head, Tyson Brailo looked terrible. Wes Schweitzer, yep. There was one, he got beat constantly, but there was one, it was a flag, but like he got knocked on his butt. And it was just like everything looked bad on that offensive line. But I mean, that was my major takeaway. You know, and then obviously the Russell Gage injury, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit. But yeah, that's my initial takeaways.
Yep. Yeah, mine aren't going to be too different. I was frustrated with Matt Ryan constantly being in this game, this meaningless game, taking hit after hit. And I think that the last series, people were just sort of shocked. And even the announcers for the game were just like, oh, Matt Ryan's back in here. Like, they couldn't believe that, head coach Dan Quinn had put him back in. Matt, to his credit, is tough as nails, but this is not the time to put that to the test. So I was a little bit frustrated seeing that. And you mentioned some of the names, and we're going to dive into that here in a little bit. And I want to start with the offense, and I want to talk about, you know, players that stood out for better or for worse, on the positive side, on the negative side. So Evan, some names that stood out on the offense. Doesn't have to be first team. It could be mm-hmm. second, third team, but some names you think that, you know, really did a good job of elevating themselves in this game on the offensive side.
First off, I guess we need to apologize to Schaub, because that first Hall of Fame game, and people even said, that he would get better. So, I mean, kudos to them, because it looked terrible in that first game. But, you know, he has bounced back. Also, I think the tight end, Jaden Graham, aside from his, like, hurdle, that was, like, very impressive. I remember Hooper mm-hmm. doing that before. But, Graham looked great. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about that, like, tight end battle going on, you know, between him, Paulson. Hooper's obviously safe. But he stood out. I mean, he led the team in receptions and yards. Yep. And for a tight end to do that, that's a big, it's probably not enough to get him concreted to the roster, but it definitely like opened some eyes that probably weren't even looking there. I mean, the team also has Alex Gray, who is that guy who was on a part of that international program where he was a practice squad. What's the word?
The 11th guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yep. So he didn't count against it, but he also couldn't be on your roster. And he had some, you know, I'd like to see more of him because I think that's an interesting flying completely under the radar battle at the tight end position because of how, you know, Hooper is quietly, you know, incredible at that position. Like there was talks year, you know, in the past 2 years about Hooper, but I think he's pretty much shut everybody up. But now we're looking at that tight end two spot, and it's getting a little more interesting as the weeks have gone on. But I'd like to see Gray get more action. But yeah, Graham is who really stood out to me. Who stood out to you?
Yeah, you know, I think Graham is the big name. He, like you said, he led the entire team in receptions. He pulled down 4 receptions for 55 yards. He did have that one sort of spectacular leap where he hurdled the defensive player. You know, in pass blocking, he struggled. Which is not uncommon for a young tight end, especially a tight end that is focused more on receiving. But I think if we got done with this game and my immediate reaction was Eric Saubert, who like he was that impressive. And I know, you know, he's got to do it against, you know, better competition, but at the same time, we never even saw this kind of performance out of Saubert over the past, you know, 2.5 preseasons. So I think it's fair to say Graham has already shown more than we saw from Saubert in that time. And I'm with you. He has not necessarily cemented his spot on the 53-man roster. But with Logan Paulson sort of, you know, competing with Luke Stalker, as far as being, you know, more of a blocking tight end, Graham really shows a lot more potential in the long term. It's important to note too that, you know, Stalker, and Paulson are both north of 30 years old. So I doubt the team looks at either of those guys and says, hey, this is somewhat we want to invest, you know, our long-term capital in. But Jaden Graham, you know, he's a relatively young guy. He's only in his second year. He was on the practice squad, you know, all of last year. I think this is someone the team likes. And he has stood out in training camp too. So it's not just been this preseason game. He has stood out in training camp. I think he is working his way onto the 53-man roster. He's definitely the person I was the most impressed with. I think, you know, we saw a couple of plays out of Calvin Ridley that reminded us that this kid's going to be really good. You know, Matt Ryan was 10 of 14, and that was with 2 drops and the offensive line collapsing in on him, which just is like, it's a reminder that Matt Ryan is really damn good,
and
even if he doesn't get production. And tough, so tough. And you know, just played well even in the face of that. So, and Russell Gage, I thought, was having a relatively good game until he got injured. And obviously, we're still waiting to hear the feedback on that injury. All we know is that it's related to his hip. It could be a host of things. Obviously, the worst case scenario, Evan, as you mentioned in our writers' chat, would be a dislocated hip, which could potentially put him out for a long period of time. A bruised hip would have him out for a few weeks. Hip flexor injuries are, you know, they can vary. We don't know anything yet. I suspect we'll find out later this week. But it was sort of disappointing to see him go down with injury, especially since, you know, he's really had arguably one of the strongest preseasons of any of the offensive players so far.
Yeah, I'm going to put it out there. I'm no doctor, but I've seen like what hip dislocations look like. And he reacted that sort of way where initially, like, if you watched him on the film, it could have been anything. Like, it wasn't like he went straight for his hip. You could just tell he was in agonizing pain.
Right.
And then as they, you know, were talking to him, you could see the trainers obviously favoring that hip. I believe it was his left hip because he went up. It was a, you know, nobody's talking about the pass. He dropped it, but I think he dropped it because he probably, you know, he obviously
sustained the injury.
Yeah. If he didn't get hurt, but honestly, I don't know a human being who could fall on their hip like that and not do damage. Like he got up there. That's the frustrating part is he has shown probably the most promise on this whole. I mean, aside from the regular guys, like, we know Ridley's good. We know Ryan's good. Yep. Like, they're not surprising us. But Gage is the one that's really amongst, I think, the entire offense came out and put on a statement the last 3 weeks. And to see him go down like that, you know, I by the time people are listening to this, they may already know what the injury is. So, you know, but at the time of us recording this, we have no idea. But hopefully it's some little hip, you know, thing that'll keep him out a couple weeks and he'll be good to go, because, you know, dislocated hips literally have ruined NFL careers, and you would hate to see that because he has flashed.
Yeah, absolutely. Flip side of the ball. So offense, some guys who maybe hurt their stock or played so poorly that you were pulling your hair out.
I mean, I think the obvious one's Matt Sims. I think I could have done a better job, and I have the utmost respect for NFL players, but he looked bad. Like, he was, what was that conference called? The American Alliance Football, or whatever it was, that league?
Right.
And that's, he was apparently, what, do you know what team, was he on the Atlanta team in that league?
Yes. Yeah, he sure was.
Yeah. That's where he belonged. And he should have, like, not came back. That was, it was embarrassing watching him throw. But, I mean, you know, now we've got Etling, so at least maybe, you know, I'm craving that developmental. Obviously, nobody's going to pass Matt Ryan, but it's nice to have a developmental project. And Banker, you know, obviously looked the part and then got injured. So I don't even know why Sims is on the roster. Maybe just he's friends with people because he came back. But I'd like, I mean, I'm hoping to see, like, Etling just, you know, push him out of there, because that he looked bad. I mean, his stats are 9 for 19, which, you know, it's not good. Oh, and
it's not good. No,
it's not good. But somehow he played even worse than what his stats are saying. I don't know.
He was wildly inaccurate.
Failed it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I mean, the interception went for a touchdown, right?
Yeah, it was a pick six.
Yeah.
And it just all night he was missing guys where he had opportunities. So no, I agree. And I don't think anyone was counting on Matt Sims to be anything more than a camp body at this point. And you know, you mentioned Matt Schaub earlier. I think he's sort of cemented his position again as the backup quarterback, which I know some fans are really, like, upset about, but it is like, I don't see anyone replacing him. You mentioned the name earlier, and I think I want to highlight him because he stood out in the worst of ways, and it was Tyson Breo.
Yeah.
He was very, very, very bad. Like, incredibly bad, frustratingly bad. He, you know, we've heard him call the turnstile before, and he lived up to that name. He was getting beat by everybody. And it was, you know, and that, this is on a night where, you know, several of the offensive linemen struggled. Jamon Brown struggled. Lindstrom struggled. Lindstrom's a rookie, so you expect that to some extent. But Sombrio, like, I'm legitimately wondering if the team is going to need to take a serious look at putting Matt Gono out there at right tackle, because of how bad Sombrio was. And to put some perspective on this, when I was at training camp in the first weekend of training camp this year, Sombrio was someone who stood out for those exact same reasons. He was getting beat in camp by multiple guys. I saw him get beat in, like, back-to-back pass sets by Vic Beasley and then John Kaminsky. And they beat him badly. It wasn't something where, like, they barely got around him. They embarrassed him. And I think we saw that on Thursday night, and it's really concerning because he looked good at the tail end, or decent. I don't want to say good. He looked decent enough at the tail end of 2018 that I think some people thought, okay, if he can be decent, then that's all we really need. But he was well below decent. So what do you make of Sombrio? Like, do you think he's, it feels like he was one of the biggest disappointments.
Yeah, he definitely just, I mean, he was getting beat. I don't know what else I could add to what you were saying. You summed it up perfectly. They're going to have to do something, because thank God these games don't count. But they do count towards, you know, what's our opening day depth chart and roster going to look like. So, I mean, he was still playing. It wasn't like he was playing high school kids out there or something. Like you said, he was getting beat in camp. He was getting beat against guys who aren't even on this team. He's getting beat. That's the problem. And when you have Matt Ryan back there, it's great to have Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones and Matt Ryan. But if you're not able to get the ball out, because Ryan, you know, not to double back on how tough he is, but he was taking shot after shot. And it just looked awful. A lot of the reason was because guys like Sam Brailo were getting just absolutely mauled. But they're going to have to do something, because that ain't going to fly. I mean, when you get into the regular season and you look at our schedule and the pass rushers we're going to be up against, like, you don't want to see Sam Brailo going against a lot of these guys.
No, and he's a guy that if he's out there and plays like this, he will stifle the offense. He will be bad enough to keep the offense from being successful. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely a name to keep an eye on. So before we dive into the defensive players and who stood out, for better or for worse, we're going to take a quick break. We will be right back. And we're back on the Falcoholics post-game podcast for preseason week 2, Atlanta hosting the New York Jets. This is Dave Walker. I'm here with Evan Birchfield. We are going through the game. We've talked about the offense. We're going to talk about the defense now, because I do think, unlike the offense, there were a few bright spots. I do want to highlight the fact that this is the first game since week 3, week 4, where we saw Ricardo Allen and Keanu Neal both dressed and out on the field for the first time. So it was fantastic to see those guys out there. It was, you know, really encouraging. Obviously, we want to see Deion Jones out there as well. But it looks like these guys, you know, they're obviously, this was a game to get some of the rust off, and it was clear that, you know, both guys were a little bit rusty. But it was really exciting to see them back out there. So Evan, what were your thoughts on seeing our two starting safeties back and actually playing in an NFL game?
It was great to see. I think the biggest shock was when you see them walking out of the tunnel in uniform, and you can see, you know, they show it before the game, obviously on like social media and stuff like that. And you see them all suited up and ready to go. And it's like, I feel like it was just yesterday when, you know, they all went down, and it was just like soul crushing. So it's a good feeling to know where, you know, a couple of weeks away from them actually being like in real action and being out on the field. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really good to see them back. All right. So I'm going to turn it over to you. What defensive player or players stood out to you in a positive way that made a positive impression in this game?
Yeah. I thought that Tyler Davison looked very good. There was one play in specific where he basically like bobbed and weaved his way into the backfield. And I can't do it justice, so you'd have to just see the video, but he looked really good. All of a sudden it's like our defensive tackle depth is like very impressive. And I noticed one thing, like Sanat really didn't play a whole lot. So I'm kind of curious what's going on with that. But but Davison, I mean, he was the biggest takeaway. Jermaine Grace was out there getting some more experience and stuff like that. And then I thought I saw Alan Bailey out there a little bit. I think he was even inside a bit. So, you know, that's interesting. But yeah, I would go Davison.
Yeah. And to your point, Sanat, he got 18 snaps total. But he was behind Justin Zimmer on the depth chart for this game. So I know a lot of people are wondering what is up with that. And honestly, you know, we talked about this in our writers chat. There's a lot that we don't see, both as fans and even for those of us who are writers, and we get more access, you know, with Gina, you know, being able to cover the practices and whatnot. There's a lot we don't see. And Sanat, he's interesting because I think, you know, we haven't seen maybe a ton of development from last year to this year, as opposed to some of the other guys who are going from year one to year two. I'm with you, though, on Tyler Davison. He stood out. And I'm actually right now looking at Pro Football Focus and their defensive grades. And he was the highest graded defensive player. So good on you, Evan, for being in lockstep with what PFF saw. I think another name that stood out was Vic Beasley. He had the sack, and it was a legitimate one. It was based on an inside move. And it was good to see him do something other than just use the speed rush. And it was like a legitimate sack. It wasn't a cleanup sack. It wasn't, you know, a junk sack. It was him beating the tackle with a good, you know, inside counter and getting to the quarterback. Want to see more of that, but it was nice to see that yet again. I thought Austin Larkin continued to make a case that, you know, he should get at minimum consideration for the practice squad. And, you know, we'll just have to see how the 53-man plays out. But this guy has come out of nowhere. Like, before last week, we didn't even know who Austin Larkin freaking was. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, he's you know, sort of up there. And actually, along those lines, I thought Justin Zimmer played relatively well at defensive tackle. So, as you noted, we've got some really good depth at defensive tackle now, whereas I think going into the season, a lot of people were thinking, oh, we need to draft a defensive tackle, draft. And it really seems like between Davidson, you know, Jarrett, and, oh gosh, Jack Crawford in passing downs.
Hageman wasn't even out there.
Yeah. Hageman was injured, didn't get to play. Justin Zimmer as a potential, you know, guy who could jump in front of DJ Snott. There's some really good depth here. So, I definitely agree. Tyler Davidson may be the best free agent signing so far for the Falcons this season. He looked really good definitely in this game. Agree. So let's flip the script. Who on defense do you think maybe did not have such a great game compared to the other guys?
I mean, nobody really stood out as just not having a great game, but you know, I mean, it's really not like big injuries, at least that we know of, but like, it's worth noting that KZ got hurt, and it looked like a rib injury. And apparently, as we are recording this, it was like a day-to-day. So he should be good to go for a regular.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a bruised rib.
Yeah, not on Gage's level, because we don't know what's Gage's. But they gave some news on KZ. And then Sheffield on a, I believe it was a punt return or something. He pulled his hammy, or it looked like he pulled it. I don't think he returned to the game, did he?
He did not.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's something to monitor, especially for somebody who, you know, his biggest ability is pretty much his speed. I think he was like one of the fastest people in the entire draft. So you kind of hate to see that, especially early in preseason. But, I mean, nobody really jumped out as like being terrible. I mean, I mentioned the Sanat thing where it's kind of interesting. But, I mean, you explained it, but, you know, it's still kind of interesting. Like, why isn't he out there? But, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see anybody who looked bad?
You know, I don't think anyone was terrible. I think Bleedy Ray had a couple of bad plays. Like, he had a pass interference call against him, which was pretty obvious. Rico, you know, looked a little bit rusty. He missed some tackles, which is to be expected. You know, he hasn't played since week three last year. And I think, you know, just some of the young guys, obviously, they're still getting their bearings about them. Jordan Miller was one of the corners. I think that, you know, he struggled a little bit here and there. But actually, overall, I felt like the defense played pretty decently. You know, they gave up the touchdown drive at the beginning, but then they really settled down. It seemed like, you know, the next two series, the defense really got their act together. They basically, for the most part, shut down the Jets offense. You know, we saw them generating some pressure. We saw them, you know, defending passes, getting some good tackles. I thought Desmond Trufant actually had a pretty strong game, at least from, you know, the run defense and tackling guys, even if he got, you know, beat in coverage a couple times. But it really felt like the defense was a little bit better of the performer compared to the offense. So that's good. You know, I feel like that's the unit that more fans were concerned about. Like, I don't think anyone was really saying, hey, you know, we don't think Matt Ryan and Julio are going to get it done this year.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a foregone conclusion that Ryan, Julio, Ridley, Sanu, they're going to be able to put some points up. I think the question marks were with the defense, and I didn't see anything that made me feel like the defense is going to be terrible. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels like splitting hairs to really drill down on guys like, you know, Bleedy Ray for the pass interference and stuff like that. It's like you're nitpicking one or two plays from each guy. But in total, it felt like the entire unit really just played solid. So even though, you know, the game ended in a loss, I felt good about the defense at the end of this game. What's your take about the defense in general? Did you feel good about it as well, or do you feel like there's still some holes to patch?
No, I felt good about it. I think the important thing is to remember is there's been like when you see certain things happening on along the defense, it's you got to remember, oh, well, Deion Jones isn't in there. It's like we haven't seen the complete package, like it all combined. It's like we're looking at imagine you're putting a puzzle together and it's like, well, does that look like a finished product? No, but we still got pieces to put in there. Like there were holes and, you know, when they look sloppy, you got to remember some of the starters aren't in there. So, I mean, I have an optimistic feeling about the defense personally, which, you know, you, as a Falcons fan, you rarely have. So a lot more optimistic than last year, you know, and that was before knowing the injuries. I just feel like they've, even getting hurt, you know, it's another year of knowledge under their belt, even just being around the team and stuff like that. My expectations are high, you know, as long as KZ's fine, you know, I just feel like this, it's this fine machine that's ready to go, but obviously preseason, you're not going to have everybody out there, but it's nice to see, you know, Neil and stuff get on the field. Even if they're not playing like a full game or whatever, it's still nice to know they're out there, getting some, you know, football under their belt, ready for the regular season.
Yep. Yep, and Keanu and Ricardo both got about 20, 21, 22 snaps in that range each. So you could tell the coaching staff was trying to get some of that rust worn off and to slowly get them ready. But I think that's also a sign that both guys are going to be ready for the regular season. If they're getting 20 snaps in this preseason game, I imagine the next preseason game we'll see a little bit more. But to me, that is a sign that those guys are going to be ready to go, raring and ready to go by the first regular season game. So I think that's really encouraging. I do want to see how Deion Jones progresses because, you know, to your point, we haven't seen the full defense on the field yet. And it feels like if we would have had him out there, that maybe even that first touchdown drive wouldn't have happened because he's that much of a difference maker in the middle of the defense. Mm-hmm. But even without him out there, I saw a lot of things I liked, you know, the interior pressure from our defensive tackles, Vic Beasley making a pass rush move for once in his life. You know, some of these guys just really, you know, further down the depth chart who we're going to have to count on at times, you know, delivering and actually, you know, coming through in the game against other starters. So, don't want to read too much into a preseason game. But some of the individual performances did stand out positively. Mm-hmm. So before we wrap this up, any final thoughts on this preseason game? Anything you want to tell the fans, you know, as far as calming expectations or anything of that sort before we wrap this one up?
Well, I don't want to take much longer, but this could go on for hours. I could have like a long conversation, but obviously Tavecchio missing those two 52-yarders.
Yes.
Which, if you follow me on Twitter, you know my thoughts, so I'm not going to dive too much into it. But, you know, the team is committed to him. I think that proves it by, because I would have, if I was running the team, I would have ran to the phone the second he missed that second. I wouldn't even got rid of Matt Bryant, but let's pretend I did. I would have ran to the phone and called him up and been like, I'm so sorry. Please come back. You know, like he broke up with somebody, but I don't know. I'm just, you know, I'm hesitant to let go because yeah, it's preseason, but I think that usually applies more to like offense and defense. When you're a kicker, you're just kicking the ball. I don't think when you enter the regular season, it all of a sudden becomes like, okay, now it matters. So I need to make this like, I mean, what the first, in fairness, the first one was locked. But they, you know, he missed the second one. It went, I think, wide left or something. So it doesn't give me a good feeling, definitely, because, you know, as Falcon fans, we've been literally spoiled with, you know, always knowing, oh, get into field goal range because Matt Bryan will just make it and we'll win. Where
right. Yep.
The fans are going to, if the team goes this route, because I mean, I think most of the fans love Matt Bryant. The reason he's not on the team is money, because he was supposed to get paid $3 million. And then also, you know, yep. he had a hamstring injury, even though like he came back and kicked and won us the game against the Buccaneers in the last week. And his age, which yep. I don't see as such a big deal because we literally had Morten Andersen out there at like 50 or something. So to me, that's not a big deal, but I know certain people are against it and that's fine. But the thing those fans will have to get used to this season is, like I said, when we get in those situations where the offense just isn't going to score, because we know how this team, if you've been a fan a long time, you know how the team is, where they're fine. You know, when it really matters, the offense can struggle. You know, we have a new offensive coordinator, or not a new one, but rejoining us, and Dirk Koetter. But, you know, it's going to be those situations where in the past you never really got that. And like, you would get nervous, obviously, because you want to win. And if Matt Bryant makes it, but you would have that thing in the back of your head telling you, you know, he's going to make it. You had utmost confidence. Now it's going to be a little different because, you know, with Tavecchio, he missed in the Hall of Fame game, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe a 54 yarder. And then
yep.
last night was two 52 yarders. Obviously, like I said, one of them was disrupted by a defender. I don't know whose fault that is. But, you know, when we get into those 50 ranges, because any kicker can make, you know, 20 to 30, or they should be able to. That should be the job of a kicker. But when you get to those 50, that's where you decide who's going to win that game. And it's something all of us have taken advantage of the last decade, with Matt Bryan being so automatic. I mean, you know, some people would tell you he's the most clutch kicker in NFL history. He's definitely eighth most accurate. It's going to be a rude awakening, because when it comes, even if the back of their head, they're like, man, we shouldn't have got rid of Matt Bryan. I don't think the upper management's would admit failure or admit an error and be like, you know what, let's bring him back.
Definitely not.
They're going to go down with their ship, because, you know, some people even before the season saying they're on the hot seat, whether they are, I would probably say no, but, you know, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but they're not going to admit failure or error after three preseason games. But no, right now the games don't matter. So Tavecchio's misses aren't going, like, they're not a big deal. I'm just saying, once we get into those regular season games, and if he's still doing this, you know, I mean, the fans are going to revolt, and they already seem to be on Twitter, at least.
Oh, I think it's already started.
Yeah. Well, they'll be, I mean, they may be like walking up to the castle, but they'll be throwing stuff, you know, if this happens during the regular season. But, I mean, I don't want to take up more time, but my initial thought on that is, you just gotta, you know, if he's the kicker of the future, you gotta be patient with him. When he misses those kicks, you gotta be okay. You know, we lost the game, yeah, you missed the kick, but that's what you signed up for when you got rid of the eighth most accurate kicker in NFL history because of you think he's too old. So
yeah, no, I think that's a great point. The two missed field goals, I do, you know, I think fans are rightfully concerned, and yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on, because it's, you know, you said it perfectly. We got spoiled with a kicker who was crazy accurate and clutch as they come. And honestly, you know, there are worse kickers in the league. You know, ask the Bears how bad the kicking situation can get. You know, they literally saw their playoff hopes completely dashed purely by the kicker. So it's Tavecchio, I think, can still pull it together, but he really needs to pull it together quickly, yeah, before we get into some of the games that count. So, yeah, and to your point, it's one of those things that until we actually get to the regular season and facing this, you know, head on, folks are going to need to be patient. Like you said, it's he is not going to be Matt Bryant, and mm-hmm. we're all going to have to live with that. Cause I think you're exactly right. The Falcons front office, they're going to commit to Tavecchio this year, for better or for worse. And it could be, you know, hopefully not, but it could be some painful sledding in the meantime.
Yeah, because Ryan, and when you think about it, Ryan and Bryant probably have one of the most underrated connections in Falcons history, just because of, I mean, how many games Matt Ryan gets credit for winning, which he obviously earned because he's best quarterback in NFL history, and got Matt Bryant into field goal range, but also Matt Bryant misses those kicks. And I did an article on it. You can go back and find it, or, you know, it's there on the Falcoholic somewhere. But Matt Bryant won so many games for the Falcons, which, you know, he's not always going to get credit for, but they had a mutual, they benefited each other, where now, you know, the offense, if the offense is the best in the league, it's not going to really matter. It's just, I've been a Falcons fan long enough to see where they would get, you know, we'd be losing. Okay, let's get into field goal range for Matt Bryant. They're going to have to get closer now, because 50 and over isn't automatic. Matt Bryant tore his, or, you know, pulled his hamstring last year, I believe it was on a 57 yarder that he ended up making. So
he did make it. Yeah.
I mean, like, that's what I'm saying is, you know, like, I can't remember off the top of my head, but Tavecchio made, I believe, a 24 yarder or something in this game. And that's fine. But those are kicks that kickers make. What you separate the great kickers from the normal kickers, you know, in the league, is when you get to that high 40s, over 50 range, because normal kickers aren't automatic at 50. It's just, we're so used to it. Like, a 52 yard field goals missed is normal for normal kickers. But if Matt Bryant did it, we'd all be like, whoa, what's going on here? But that's normal, you know, as much as people want to, you know, he's only 29 years old. He's a young kid. But that's not something kickers do, 52 yard field goals. That's not automatic anymore. And we're going to have to get used to that.
Yep, absolutely. So on that note, we're wrapping up this podcast covering the Jets game, the preseason game. We will be back next week as the Falcons take on their third preseason game again in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And hopefully we'll have a much better experience to talk about in that game.
Losing streak coming up.
of all the records, that's a great one. So Evan, tell our listeners where they can find you, what you've got going on.
You can find me at the Falcoholic, writing whatever. I don't know off the top of my head right now. I mean, I actually had a Matt Bryant Tavecchio article that came out today, which is, you know, available on thefalcoholic.com. You can read that anytime. And I appreciate you having me on here.
Yep. And as for me, guys, you can find me on the Twitters at FalcoholicDW. You can find Evan at Evan Birchfield.
Yes, that is right.
Of course, you'll find both of us on the postgame podcast here and at thefalcoholic.com. So for Evan Birchfield, this is Dave Walker. We thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll talk with you next time.